This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
And welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, March 20th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we discuss archaeology. I'm going to discuss AWACS and what is happening in this place in Grand Bahama. But I have a great Bahamian on who's doing some great research and some good documentaries, and I said I got to bring him on because I'm interested in this. But without further ado, I'm going to introduce my guest. My guest is Mr. Michael Pateman. Mr. Pateman, are you on? Because I have him on Zoom.
Good morning. Yes, I am on.
And yes, I need to have a narrative for you so people understand and appreciate why I cherish you so much, why I herald you as one of the greatest behemoths we have right now. But you, by profession, are the creator.
I'll say who I am. So yes. Just to correct you starting off, so it's Dr. Michael Pateman, but everybody who knows me knows I prefer to go by Michael or Mike. I'm not stuffy about being called doctor. I am currently, in my profession, a curator and lab director at the Bahamas Maritime Museum in Freeport, Grand Bahama. But as you said, I am an archaeologist. I'm an anthropologist. I'm trying to be a documentary filmmaker. I think I'm a little bit of a jack of all trades, but I focus on not the Arawaks, the Lucayans.
I see you're trying to make a distinction there. The Arawaks and Lucayans are two different people. Okay. But I want to speak on anthropology and archaeology and your experience with that. And then I want to transition into what you are doing now, this documentary, and how you get back in the Bahamas, because I thought you was in Turks.
All right, yeah. Where do you want to start?
No, I want to start basically, what have you been doing in terms of archaeology in the Bahamas, right, and explain that? Because few people realize that you're the leading archaeologist in the country and that you are regionally known and renowned and you've done some great work, and I want to herald that.
Well, I appreciate the kind words. So, yes, I'm an archaeologist, and for those who don't know what archaeology is, archaeology is the study of human past through what people have left behind and where they lived. So that's basically, we look at the sites and artifacts that they left behind. I specialize in the Lucayans. And so this is obviously before Columbus or before European contact in the New World. I have had the pleasure to say that I probably have visited every major island in the Bahamas, lots of the keys, lots of the rocks, many places that people haven't been before or modern people haven't really gone, to try and get a better understanding of who were the Lucayans, where'd they come from, and how can we know more about them.
So your study is mostly on Lucayans. Have you found any Lucayans artifacts?
Basically, the Lucayans were everywhere in the Bahama archipelago. And I'm saying Bahama archipelago instead of Bahamas because the Lucayans also lived in the Turks and Caicos, which are a part of the Bahama archipelago. And they lived everywhere. Or I shouldn't say they lived everywhere. They were all over the island. So we find evidence of them on basically every island, every key, some of the rocks, anywhere we go today, Lucayans were probably there first.
And I know you made a distinction between Lucayans and Arawaks. Can you just explain that so people who listen in can understand? Because I know one's a language and one is a people.
Right. So, well, actually, Arawak is a tribe in South America. But the Lucayans and the Taino Indians who are in the Great Antilles, they spoke Arawak as their language. And so I think if you read some of the early texts about Bahamian history in the 17, 18, even in the 1900s, they described the first people as Arawak-speaking people. And I think eventually, at some point, somebody got lazy in their writing, and instead of calling them Arawak-speaking people, they just started calling them Arawaks. But archaeologists, we like to call them Lucayans because they called themselves Lukukari, which means island people or people of the islands. And the Spanish called them the Lucayos, and the English version of this is Lucayan. So I prefer to use Lucayans instead of Arawaks.
So the Bahamas, and we can include Turks and Caicos, had a distinguished group of Native Americans living in this region.
Yes, they were closely related to the Taino people who lived in Cuba and Hispaniola, because that's where they would have originally migrated from. But once they came to the Bahamas, their lifestyle changed, their culture changed. And even genetically, they became a little bit different. I won't use the word evolved because I know that's a dirty word in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But they were a distinct people represented by their own culture, similar to how we Bahamians today are distinct, mostly based on our culture.
I know in Andros, there are some people who would say they are descended from Seminoles, right? They're Seminoles descent. Are there any Lucayan descendants right now in the Bahamas?
So that's a very interesting question. And I would say I would not be surprised if we found somebody with Lucayan DNA in their system. But those who have claimed it and even shown me their DNA studies, I still don't believe that they're fully Lucayan descent. And so I'll tell you why. The first person of Taino ancestry whose DNA was sequenced was actually a Lucayan burial from Preacher's Cave.
From the Bahamas.
So all Taino DNA then traced back to Preacher's Cave. And so while, as I said earlier, the Lucayans were a little different, it still was close enough genetically where you can get that relations. But then when I start asking people their family histories and their family heritage, you hear about a migration in the 1800s from Haiti, or you hear about a migration from Cuba, or even from Belize, where some Native American ancestry in the Caribbean came in about 6,000 years ago. So you can actually then sort of surmise or interpret that maybe that DNA evidence didn't come from the Bahamas, but came from elsewhere in the Caribbean.
So what about those Long Island people who brown and they say, man, no, man, I have Taino's blood. I see it. You can look at me and see the old pictures. We look Lucayan.
Well, I mean, they spent they're like me, fair skin, spent a lot of time in the sun, have straight hair. The DNA doesn't support their claim of Lucayan ancestry. And it may also be a part of trying to claim ownership and belongership, because what's the oldest Bahamians? Lucayan ancestry. So if we have this narrative of who are Bahamians, I always started with the Lucayans. And if you can prove that you are descended from Lucayan, and even though I say there's no evidence of it yet, I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to find somebody who we can trace ancestry to the Lucayans. But until that, I remain skeptical.
I know once upon a time there was a DNA project searching for Lucayans, natives in the Bahamas. Is that project still going on, or that has been discontinued?
So there have always been people doing DNA studies, and there was some modern DNA studies, but I was a part of a team that we looked at ancient DNA. So we sampled about 30 Lucayan skeletons from throughout the Bahamas. And this was actually part of a larger project where over 200 skeletal remains from throughout the Caribbean had their DNA and their DNA sampled to try and get a better understanding of who were the indigenous people of the Caribbean and where did they come from. So we published a big paper on that in Nature, which is a prestigious journal. But since I was the lead from the Bahamian side, I wanted to then take it further and just look at the Lucayan DNA. And so I sort of put a call out there for people who had done their DNA studies, if they had gotten anything that showed that they had Taino or Lucayan ancestry, if they wouldn't mind sharing it with me. Because we wanted to try and find traces of modern Lucayans. And a few people shared their results with me, and this is when I started digging into the family history. And you find one person on their mother's side, that's where the DNA came from, but their mother's family migrated from Cuba. And fairly, I would say, in the last 150 years. Mm-hmm. So that's probably where that DNA came from. Somebody else, I think their family came through Cayman. And that one's still puzzling me because there were no indigenous people in Cayman. So I'm wondering if this is another Cuban sample, person who moved from Cuba to Cayman to the Bahamas. And so it's always, the ones I've seen has always been like that, where there's just something that doesn't definitively prove that these people are Lucayan ancestry.
I mean, before we transition to your new job, the curator and lab director of the Bahamas Maritime Museum, right? And I know you've done one or two big projects with that. There is a move to have this part of the ocean, this part of the sea where the Bahamas is, to be renamed Lucayan Sea, right? Are you a part of that movement? Why do people want to change our name from being in the middle of the Atlantic to have a region of just saying this, the Lucayan Sea?
Well, we will always be in the middle of the Atlantic, but the move to define our territorial waters as the Lucayan Sea is something that's pushed by former Commodore of the Defense Force, Talis Bethel. And I do support the move because while the Bahama Archipelago and our territorial waters aren't definition of what a sea is, I mean, that's the biggest problem with his push, is if you look at the definition of a sea, the Bahama Archipelago and our territorial waters don't 100% fit that definition. But it's about owning our own narrative. It's about claiming our narrative as who we want to be. And what better way than to honor the first people or the indigenous people of these islands, the first victims of European genocide. So, and when I talk about the Lucayans, I actually always use this fact. An interesting but sad part of our history is that the Bahamas was the last place on Earth to be populated by indigenous populations before Europeans started this global expansion. But we were the first place to be depopulated because of European expansion.
That's profound. We're the last ones, last district to be populated by indigenous people.
This is a global thing. Yes. Globally, the islands of the archipelago, these are the last places on the planet. Now, I'm talking about before Europeans started this globalization.
Yes.
So before 1492, the Bahamas is the Bahama Archipelago, the last place to be populated. And obviously, we were the first place to be depopulated because of Europeans. So our history books will say 1513 or 1520. That's when there are no more Lucayans. But archaeologists actually believe that the Lucayans were here until about early 1600s.
And that's interesting because we were already populated by the Eleuterian adventurers by that time. So there's
The Lutheran Adventurers came mid-1600s.
Ah.
Yeah. So, and the Lutheran Adventurers, if you actually read their original charter, they made reference to what they would do if they found indigenous people living here. So they wouldn't put that in there if there wasn't some thought or belief that there may still be remnant populations in the islands.
Interesting.
But we are finding archaeological evidence that Lucayans were here until about, I would say, late 1500s, early 1600s.
I'm talking to Dr. Michael Pateman, who's a curator and lab director of Bahamas Maritime Museum. And also he's doing a documentary. And now I'm going to talk about this Bahamas Maritime Museum. What is that? And what do you do as a curator and lab director? What all that means?
So once again, I said earlier on, I'm a jack of all trades. So that's my job. I would say that's my job description now. So the Bahamas Maritime Museum, we're located in Port Lucaya Marketplace in Freeport, Grand Bahama. It's a private museum. It's owned by Carl and Gigi Allen, who are also the developers of Walker's Key. This project, we were in the news last year when we opened. So Ms. Allen got the first official license from the Bahamian government to search for and recover shipwrecks in Bahamian waters. And so in the museum, we sort of tell our maritime heritage and showcase those artifacts. So one of my responsibilities is for the conservation work of any artifact that's found and recovered. I'm responsible for its conservation work and making sure that it survives and documenting it. And then we tried as much as possible to put it in the museum. Or obviously, we can't put everything that we find in the museum. So we showcase a lot of it in our educational programming. We bring in a lot of school kids. Right now, we've only had school kids from Grand Bahama and Abaco come through. But we're hoping in the future that, because we know schools from New Providence and others come to Grand Bahama for field trips. So we're hoping that those schools can also come to the museum. So we showcase the dynamic heritage of maritime heritage of the Bahamas, because we are a maritime nation. So people call us the treasure museum because there are some treasures that have been found that are showcased, but that's not everything we're about. We have an exhibit on the Lucayans. We have an exhibit on the transatlantic slave trade. We have an exhibit on traditional boat building and sloop sailing in the Bahamas. And we're hoping within the next year, we'll actually start to work on a museum in downtown Nassau also.
And you mentioned treasure.
Mm-hmm.
All kind of pirates was in the Bahamas. I expect there'll be treasure all over. What about that Fortune's Cave? I'm not sure the narrative, but I know that there's supposed to be some discrepancy of whether there was treasure trove there. And how does that impact the Bahamas Maritime Museum, if there is treasure there, that is?
So every island, every rock, every key has some treasure story. I've heard them all. I don't personally believe that there's treasure at Fortune Hill in San Salvador, which you're talking about.
What?
Because, all right, so this is the narrative. There's pirate treasure somewhere. There's always a story that there's pirate treasure somewhere. Pirates didn't bury their treasure. Pirates, if you study pirates, they either, you had two sorts who were pirates. You had single men who were sailors. So once they got their share of the loot and they went to some harbor somewhere, what are they going to do? They're going to spend it on women and money. I mean, women and booze, sort of like what we do today. You had some pirates who were actually family men who had families. What would they do? They would send their share of the loot to their families. So what do they need to do after that? Go out and find more treasure. So there was no sort of, there's no example globally of pirates burying their treasure somewhere. They just didn't do it. That's something that was created by Hollywood. And I kid you not, I've heard of probably every island in the Bahamas, someone has some story of treasure buried somewhere in a cave or something like that.
in terms of telling our story, the Bohemian story, right? I know you're telling a tale or a story of Lucayans, and now you're telling the story of our maritime history. How important should our history and past stories, you know, pirates, the colonialism, Africans, and Lucayans merging together, how important is telling that story in terms of the movement or the development of the Bahamas?
Our history is incredibly important, and our history is actually unique. I tell people that Bahamian history has some very unique stories, and we need to begin to own those stories and tell the true stories. Or let's get away from these stories that are created for tourists, because actually, unfortunately, a lot of our historical narrative are stories that we make up for tourists. So I'll use a prime example, Blackbeard's Tower. Blackbeard's Tower was never used by Blackbeard.
What?
That's, yeah, I know. That's another one that I get a lot. It's not a true story. That tower was built well after Blackbeard lived in the Bahamas. Now, it was a story that was created. My suspicion was in the 1920s when the first tourism development board was formed, they were looking for things to sell tourists on. And I think they created that narrative. And the narrative goes, oh, the locals say that Blackbeard lived here. But now was constructed well after Blackbeard, just from looking at the construction style. Now, what we can say was that Blackbeard did live in Nassau. Blackbeard was one of the leaders of the Pirate Republic. That's a narrative we can sell. But we need to stop creating these narratives. Or a lot of people are aware that I've been working with Christopher Davis, mm-hmm. who just published his book, The Black Rinse, New Perspectives on the African Diaspora in the Bahamas. And one of the things that he's discovered is I would call it the true story of the origins of John Canoe. So John Canoe, as we know him as, was never a slave, because that's one of the narratives we were taught, that John Canoe was a slave in the Bahamas. He was an African prince, and he was captured, and he was a slave in the Bahamas, and he begged the colonial leaders to allow his people those days off, and it's a celebration of him because of that. That narrative is completely, I won't curse, but completely crap. Mm. But the true story is that John Canoe, or as he's known in his traditional language, Jan Kwao, was the king of the warriors. And he fought against the slave trade in Ghana. And it's his warriors who were captured after a battle who brought his name and the celebration of him to the Bahamas. And that's where the whole story starts. And through Christopher's research, this debate between the John Canoe originated in the Bahamas or Jamaica or North Carolina, or there's so many places. I think Christopher's research and some new information we're finding is we can claim that. John Canoe was ours. It came from here and then it radiated out.
I have a question via text on who have you collaborated with in terms of archaeologically?
Sorry, say that again, my phone's not
ringing. Yeah, who have you collaborated with in terms of archaeology?
So I've worked with, a lot of people know the name Bill Keegan or William Keegan. He's written a few books on Bahamian archaeology. So I've worked with him probably for more than 10 years. I've worked with, I was trained by archaeologists, Mary Jane Berman and Perry Genovecki. Honestly, any of the archaeologists who've worked in the Bahamas since the 90s, I've worked with them.
Okay. And you were in Turks and Caicos for a while. What were you doing there?
Yeah. So in 2018, I was offered the job of as the director of the Turks and Caicos National Museum. And so I accepted it. And so I was the director of the National Museum from 2018 until I came back to the Bahamas in 2020.
Okay. And I know you're back, and we're celebrating you back. Our Bohemian Sons should be here pushing forward our agenda and our culture. And there are persons who say that we need to do more in terms of celebrating ourselves, celebrating our history, and, of course, archaeology in general. What have you been doing? I know you're doing a documentary. What have you been doing to proliferate that concept?
So the last several years, and this actually started right before COVID, I was working mostly with Bill Keegan on writing up a lot of the work that we had done. And so the first step was to publish it in the academic journals, which we've done. And so after that, I started working on a book about the Lucayans. I sort of put that on hold because I was helping Christopher with his book. And so I'm now getting back on to writing the book about the Lucayans. But I think that's one of the ways to put the information out there is to write it down. But one of the things that I'm starting to realize is that as technology changes, we have to change how we present information for people to learn. And some people, you have a crowd of people who will read a book. But unfortunately, reading is not as popular as it should be. So we have to find other ways to put that information out there. And so that's why I called myself an aspiring documentary filmmaker, because one of the things that I'm going to start doing in the next couple of weeks is start to put out short videos on our historical narrative, focused mostly on the subjects that I study. So the Lucayans, transatlantic slave trade, origins of junk canoe, some of the African diaspora stuff, the maritime heritage. As part of my work, we're putting out a series of videos, podcasts, things, so digital content.
So when can we expect to see one or a lot of these?
I'm hoping to start putting stuff out in the next couple of weeks.
Oh, as soon as that. Excellent.
Yeah.
We have a caller who wants to go ahead.
I have a project that I launched a few years ago, but I kind of had to put it on hold. I call it People of the Islands in honor of the Lucayans. We're basically islanders. And this is a global thing again. Islanders, we have unique stories to tell. Our cultures are so dynamic because they're shaped by the islands we live on, by our colonial pressures, by our African ancestry, by indigenous past. So, for example, although we don't have Lucayans here, we still use a lot of what they did in the past. So barbecue is a Lucayan word. Words and sort of lifestyle. So I'm going to start putting that kind of stuff out there for people to see. And I have a website that I still need to work on. It's called peopleoftheislands.com, where a lot of this stuff will go on, and YouTube and Facebook and so forth.
I see I have a caller who wants to engage you, so let me pass that caller through. But I would like to also know if you come across any pirate artifacts, but I'll ask that after the caller on next side.
Okay.
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Morning, CA.
Hey, morning. How you doing?
Doing great, man. And of course, good morning to your host,
Dr. Michael Pateman. Dr. Michael Pateman.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Morning.
Thoroughly enjoying your presentation here on the show, and there's so many aspects that I do agree with you as far as your commentary is concerned, in terms of, you know, we as a people seem not to be reading as much as we used to when we were growing up. Everything now is visual, you know, and it's good to hear that you spoke to the mere fact that perhaps producing this in a visual aspect. When you said that, it reminded me of a historical journey of Christopher Columbus back in the Crystal Palace days. We had a place called Experience the Bahamas, where he shared from 1492 to 1992 his journey to the Bahamas, and how we celebrated the 1992. I think it was 50 years. It's unfortunate that so much of our culture or our history of this country is not well documented, either in print or visual. I think now with the modern technology, where a lot of people tend to be more visual rather than reading. I think finding the sponsors perhaps to help to create a documentary, a visual documentary, is so pivotal at this time for many of us who know some of the history of this country, but more so many of our younger generation who do not even have an inkling of the history of how this country really came about. I think that is really essential, especially in a time like this, where our cultural identity, or just identity as Bahamians as a whole, is left in limbo or is in question. So I applaud you for the valiant effort, even to try and conceive bringing this about, to bring it into fruition. And if there's any way, shape, or form that I can assist in helping you in the visual or the arts, then I feel free to give me a call, because I'm very, very, very much interested in actually trying to help to bring some of this information to the public domain, especially for the edification of our school kids coming forward. CA, thanks for taking my call, and feel free to give him my number so he can get in touch with me after the program.
Certainly,
thank you, and have a great day.
Before the caller call, I was asking about pirates' artifacts, and then you said you were about to write a book, or you're writing a book about Lucayans. Is there more or new information on Lucayans? I thought we have enough information on Lucayans. So that's pirates and Lucayans.
Well, actually, so I'm going to start off with just saying what the caller said. So I want to emphasize that some people actually, when I talk about this, say, oh, why are you trying to get away from reading? And I know the caller wasn't saying that, but I think it's important for us to try and, instead of fighting the change in technologies, embrace it. And we're realizing that people are now more visual. So let's embrace it and present our history and that fact. Because one of the problems when I talk to students about history, I get the same comment, oh, it's so boring. And it made me realize, well, you know what? History isn't boring. It's the way it's presented can be boring. So we need to find a way to make it more exciting so that people will understand our history better. Because there's a lot of information about our history out there. It's just not all in one spot. So I'm hoping this can be done. So now your question about Lucayans. The more we study them, the more information we learn about them. So as archaeologists study new sites, we'll learn more information. So I can write a book today and find something that disproves what I said. And that's happened a few times already, where I've talked about the Lucayans in a public setting and said one thing, and then a few months or a few years later, new information has changed that. So I'll give an example. A lot of what we knew about the Lucayans either came from Columbus's descriptions in his logs, which are problematic, or from the sort of the Europeans, or mostly the Spanish, describing the Lucayans in their enslaved states. So how do we learn more about the Lucayans? Well, we have to study the sites that they leave behind. And there aren't that many archaeologists working in the Bahamas. And the original studies were all in caves. So when we look at the 1950s information, it's going to be based off of studies of their cave sites. Then in the 70s and the 80s, people started doing what's called pedestrian surveys. And they made assumptions about the sites based on what they saw in those surveys. So now, once again, information changes. In the 90s to 2000s, you had a lot of excavations happening. But most of those happened on San Salvador and Middle Caicos and the Turks and Caicos. So a lot of what we knew about Lucayans came from two islands. If you know anything about the Bahamas today, we may be all Bahamians, but we're all different when you go to the different islands. So as we've gone to more islands and started to study more sites, our information is evolving. And it's always going to evolve as long as we're able to do more studies.
I have this text here, even though I'm going to go back to the pirates, it says, good morning, CA, Nuri, and to your guests. I heard your guests indicate our history ties, and he mentioned some countries, including Haiti. Do we have any ties to Ghana, West Africa? And I guess, do we have any ancestral ties to Haiti, and by extension, I guess?
All right, so I guess before we go into the piracy, yes, we have ties to Ghana. So that's one of the reasons why Christopher, myself, Angelique McKay, Robin Lightbourne, Tamara Davis, and others have been going back. Christopher found, so in our history books, it talks about the first slave ship to come from the African continent to the Bahamas. Originally, it was just said West Africa. Christopher actually traced exactly where in West Africa it came from, and this is from Ghana. And the first three slave ships that came to the Bahamas all came from Ghana. And this is where we believe that sort of the knowledge of Jan Kwao and John Canoe and so forth came to the Bahamas, was from through these slave ships.
And I want to mention another text, because I still won't get to pirates. I have a text who mentioned, they have to buy a Christopher book, surely. Is there any other place other than the Bahamas that has John Canoe, and is there a connection that all is the same?
Right. So John Canoe is celebrated throughout the Americas. North Carolina has a form, and I'm not sure if it's still active. Belize has a form. Jamaica has a form. The Virgin Islands has some. And I can go on and on. There is John Canoe or some form of John Canoe celebrated throughout the Caribbean. And Christopher actually was able to find that there's mention of it or some past celebrations of it in Latin America also. So it wasn't, Bahamas, we believe, is the central place, but it's not just a Bahamian, it's not just us. Now, we celebrated bigger and better than everybody else. And I think this is why we can claim ownership of John Canoe and why we should claim ownership of John Canoe.
Okay, now finally, pirate artifacts.
Let's
I
would
know if I, yeah, because if I keep on reading these texts, I'll never get the pirates. Go ahead.
No, I've never seen anything that's pirate related in the Bahamas yet. I have a project, hopefully, that will be coming up soon that's going to change that, and I can't really discuss more about that yet. But hopefully, we'll be able to see something. But part of the problem, you have to think about it, is Nassau was the pirate republic, the city of Nassau. This is where, after Port Royal, this is where the pirates came. Nassau was their independent pirate republic, but this is the city of Nassau. So Nassau has been developed heavily since then. So a lot of those artifacts are either destroyed or buried under these buildings that are downtown now.
Mm-hmm. I have a question asking about reparations. If they can prove that they are Lucayans and have the Lucayan DNA, surely they could get reparations.
Well, I have to ask, like, this reparations from who? Because you're still, you have the whole concept of reparations for transatlantic slave trade and the Africans. So, I'm not discounting that reparations, if Lucayans still exist, but it's going to probably join the long list.
Okay. I have a caller here I'm trying to get through. Caller, can you hear me? No, that caller hang up. Make sure. Producer Grin once, Grin twice, go ahead. Next question I want to ask is, how important is or should Columbus be in our narrative? I see we in that new age, that woke era where we mashed up everything regarding Columbus. But as we tell our story, is there a place for Columbus?
Yeah, there is a place for Columbus in our story, but let's put him in his proper context. Columbus is not a great discoverer or great admiral or however you want to describe him. Yes, Columbus's voyage to the New World established a permanent connection between the Americas and Europe. That's, in my mind, that's it. That's the only credit I give Columbus. Yes, there were people in the New World before Columbus, and I'm not talking about the indigenous people. I'm talking about Europeans. There's enough evidence that shows that the Vikings went back and forth, but that wasn't a permanent connection. After their settlements were destroyed, they never came back. There's evidence that the Moors or the blacks that lived in Spain and so forth had at least come across to North America. But once again, that's not a permanent connection. And there's some talk that Columbus actually got knowledge of the landmass from Africans. So, but it's not a permanent connection. But I don't like to see us glorify Columbus, because Columbus was a cruel man, a very cruel man. I mean, the first thing he does when he sees the Lucayans is, oh, these will make great slaves because they were peaceful. Now, I also won't be the person to say I blame Columbus for taking all the Lucayans out of the Bahamas. He took, I think it's seven to 12, I can't remember. Depends on which narrative. He took 7 to 12 with him. Only one survived the voyage because of disease. Some escaped. One survived the voyage and actually came back with him as his translator on his subsequent voyages. But he never, there's no records of him ever coming back to the Bahamas. But there's plenty of records of how cruel he was in Hispaniola or Haiti, in Jamaica, and other places where he was just brutally cruel to the indigenous people.
Yes, and what about the Seminoles and our connection to that? There are some say that we are directly Seminoles. We have that Native American blood. And there are some who say, man, no. We are black Seminoles. We are African who live amongst the Seminoles. In your research, what is it?
Well, so that's not my forte, but from what I've read about it, so the black Seminoles, some of them did marry Seminole Indians. And so you will have the DNA of Seminole people in some people from those who descend from Red Bays. And you can actually see it in some of them because, like most ancestries, you can see certain physical traits in people. So some people who are descended from Red Bays, you can actually see that Native American ancestry in their skeletal features. And that's, as part of the Lucayans, that's what I studied. I studied their bones, their skeletal features. So it really stands out to me when I see people of different ethnicities and ancestries. I can see it in their facial features, where that comes from.
I can try to patch this caller through. Producer, see if you can get this caller. Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Go ahead, Sir Sparky.
Mr. Nuri, and your guest. This is Nuri, I once heard the story about Junkanoo in a different light, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, man, just go ahead.
I heard that during the Christmas season, with the slaves, the rich landowners and stuff used to give their old clothes and stuff away to the slaves. And they used to refer to them as junk. But to the slaves, it was new. Mm-hmm. So they started calling it junk made new. Junkanoo. Is there anything that your people have heard but that?
That's different.
Well, no, I've heard right? that's one I've heard before.
Yeah, I heard they used to call the junk new. When the slaves get it, they class it as new. And the white man had it as junk. So they put junk and new together, call it junk and new. Have a good day.
Thank you very much, this way. Go ahead, Doc.
See, and this is part of why we have to claim our narrative and why I love Christopher's book so much. Because a lot of our history is told from that colonial, benevolent slave master's perspective. And trying to claim our narrative as a gift from colonial powers. While there may be some truth with the masters giving away old clothes at the Christmas time, that's not where junk. And so that's why it's so important for us to claim our own narrative. An African proverb, we probably all heard it a lot. My godfather used to tell it to me when I was a kid. And then former Prime Minister Kerry Christie used to say it to me all the time when I worked at Antiques. Until the lion tells his story, the tale of the hunt will glorify the hunter. And so we need to be the ones to take our narrative and tell our narrative from our perspective. When I was talking to Christopher the other day, we were talking about bias in history and how, as a good social scientist, we're trained to not show our bias. But he believes that we should show our bias and we should be open that this is part of our bias because it's our stories. We should tell our And that's actually part of what I want to do with the People of the Islands Project, to bring it back to that. A lot of our history and even our stories are still told through singular people, the Sulinden Pinlins, the Loftus Ropers, the great people. But what about the story of the everyday man, the everyday person, who are behind a lot of that narrative? And so those are the kinds of stories that I'm hoping to capture in my project also, and share those narratives.
We're talking to Dr. Michael Pateman, anthropologist, historian, curator, all these words I can't pronounce properly, but director of the Bahamas Maritime Museum. But we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
July, August, September.
Bendy, what on earth are you doing now with all those red X's on the calendar?
I verified in person for my NIB pension today, so I'm crossing out all the months until I have to verify again.
Oh, yeah. By law, we are required to verify twice a year, in our birth months and then again 6 months later. It's important so we can continue to receive our benefit payments.
Yes, the friendly lady at NIB reminded me that the verification forms are available online at select retail locations and that you don't even have to verify in person. Once a sanctioned authority certifies your form, it can be emailed to verification@nib-bahamas.com or placed in the Dropbox at any NIB location.
NIB is making everything so convenient. The verification process is simple, and it's all outlined on NIB's website and social media pages. At NIB, they're making it easier for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio on the AM with C.A. Nuri. I'm talking to Dr. Michael Pateman, and we're talking about Bahamian history and Bahamian anthropology, all these words again, and we're talking about his project in Grand Bahama, where he's the lab director of the Bahamas Maritime Museum. But I have a caller here who wants to engage you. I also want to ask a question, because I get a text asking if the Native Americans, the Lucayans, were the same as the Native Americans in Haiti, or there are two distinctive different groups. And I think you mentioned it before, but it doesn't hurt to repeat yourself. But let me engage this caller. Producer, pass the caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Good morning, Mr. Nuri.
How you doing?
Yeah, make it quick, and good morning to your guest. I just wanted to make it, get a copy of the book. I know he had some promotion last week sometime. I missed that. But remember about a month ago, I told you that I was told by my grandparents and even my aunt, I'm still living, that my great-grandfather is a descendant of the Red Bays Indians. And then my grandmother's father, who they said, you know, he was like kind of reddish with the Afro kinky hair. And so you could see it in the phenotypical features of my family, right? And so this is not far-fetched, Mr. Nui. But I have a question for your learned guest, because I was always, I knew that the Moors had conquered Spain from the Visigoths or whatever, but they had ruled for a certain period of time. But due to the miscegenation of the Arabs, right, the Muslims, right, and influence in Northern Africa, I'm wondering why they are always trying to paint the picture of the Moors as being European. I know that, and then there's a chronicle that says they were black. Could you clarify that, please, for me? I'll just hang up and listen.
I guess that's you, Mr. Pateman. Michael disappeared. I guess we got disconnected from Zoom. Check that out, producer, see if we get it reconnected. And I guess my opinion on that is it all depends on which era you're speaking. We know that the Arabs conquered Northern Africa, and they conquered Egypt, and they moved to Morocco, and of course go across to the peninsula, Iberian Peninsula. And so under that dynasty, the Arab Moors conquered Spain. But later on, we had Western Moors West African Moors when they went internal into Africa, who later occupied Spain after the first 1000 and up to 700 AD.
post that, or starting from 700 AD, trying to get the right date. And this is why we have two different narratives. We have the early narrative, which was Arab Moors, and the latter narrative, which would be Black Moors, who would have occupied and conquered the Iberian Peninsula. But do we still have Mr. Pateman on, or Mr. Pateman is gone? Producer? He's there? Doc, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. Okay. Go ahead.
So you answered that question perfectly, but also to add to it, we have to remember that on Columbus's first journey, he had African Moors as sailors. So I'm sure there's some confusion and with the whole story, but it's also, once again, I go back to that. We have to tell our story, or in that case, the Moors need to tell their stories, because if we let Europeans tell our story, of course it's going to be presented from a European perspective.
And that's how you end, just like that. We need to tell our stories, especially as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. And moving forward, we need to include all of our stories. The story of the Lucayans, the story of the Caribbean migration, the story of Africans, the story of Europeans occupying here, the story of Bermudians coming here, and the story of Loyalists, and all of that amalgamates to be a Bohemian story. And what's the name of Christopher's book again?
Christopher's book is called The Black Rinse, New Perspectives on the African Diaspora of the Bahamas, or something like that. So I heard your caller asking about where to get it. So I know it's for sale at the Pompey Museum, Dungalick Studios, Fort Charlotte, Fort Fincastle. I'm not sure where else it is for sale. Or go on Facebook, look for Sankofa Flamingo, and send a message there. And
that's it.
They can get a copy to you.
And where we got to go, Guardian Radio AM with C. Henry. Have a wonderful day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.